Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show, hosted by author, investor, money partner, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris, equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, this is Bruce Norris. I want to thank you for joining us. For the next 2 weeks, we will be joined by Nick Manfredi. He's the president and CEO of the Short Sale Processor. He's a real estate investor, speaker, and corporate business owner. He's been featured in Fortune magazine and the LA Times, amongst others. Nick, welcome to our show.
I'm happy to be here.
For the people that have never heard the word short sale, what is a short sale?
Short sale, a good way to kind of make sense of the word, is just the lender is accepting something short of what they're owed. It's still a sale, but the lender is truly accepting something short. They may be owed $200,000, but are willing to accept, say, $150,000, which is short of the $200,000 they're owed,
okay,
in order to have the sale take place.
What would motivate a lender to do that?
Oh, geez. Right now, with this market, as it's decreasing rapidly, they want to decrease the properties that they take back on their books. Right now, in like the city of Corona, 40% of the total sales that are taking place are properties reverting back to the bank. At some point, lenders can take that for a period of time, but as the inventory grows, by golly, there comes a time they can't take back anymore. So to accept something short, especially in a falling price, with falling prices and all, is a far better option than saying, hey, let's hold out and see what happens.
Okay. The foreclosure process in California takes about how long?
Well, it depends on a few things. On average, it's going to take somewhere between 6 and, say, 8 months. A lender, though, doesn't have to go ahead and begin the process if they don't want to. And we are seeing some delays with the beginning of the process that would be the notice of default. So it used to be no matter what, 90 days, you got it. Now we're seeing 4 months. 5 months have gone by, and we can still work with those individuals. Chances are the lender saying, hey, let sleeping dogs lie, mm-hmm, and not deciding to move forward. But nevertheless, they do see it's on their books. They're not getting paid.
Back in the last downturn, I actually had an ad call one time where the guy was 20 months behind and the lender hadn't foreclosed. That's a scared lender, for sure.
That's right.
Okay. As far as the customer that says, I'd like to get involved in a short sale, is there a difference in the damage to the credit if someone decides to do a short sale as opposed to just let the property go to foreclosure?
There is a difference. The difference is far better. They have a creditor that they negotiated a settlement with versus if they decide to go into foreclosure, that is a solid mark versus, hey, a settlement. A foreclosure is a foreclosure. Frequently, and what person will do, it's just that the temptation is once the foreclosure is imminent, they decide, by golly, I heard I can declare bankruptcy. And they go into a mode of self-preservation. And as a result, they get quadruple hit. That is, they have a number of late pays followed by a bankruptcy and followed by a foreclosure. And that is devastating for individuals. So, yes, there's a definite advantage to working out a settlement with any creditor versus never paying.
How long does the process of a short sale take?
The short answer is a month and a half. The long answer is it could take 6 months. It can be a lengthy process. You just have to be prepared to kind of wait it out.
How early in the process do you as a processor know that the lender is going to say yes to the file?
How early do I know that they're going to say yes to a file?
Right. If you're talking about a 1.5 month process or a 4.5 month process, do you know in 2 weeks it's going to work or do you know on the last day it's going to work?
There's so many factors that affect the decision of a loss mitigator. Truthfully, to say that any one person is in control on the buying end would be an error in judgment. The reality is you've got a 23-year-old loss mitigator on the other line that has 70 files. You may not get the deal simply because they were sick the day before and didn't get to you. It is, and as bad as it sounds, to some degree. It isn't just a numbers game. The other aspect of it is once the lender takes back a certain number of properties, there's going to be some communication that takes place between the REO, the real estate owned department within the bank, and the asset managers to say, we're going to go ahead and give you guys a little leeway to say yes to these short sales. And the loss mitigators are all yeehaw because they get compensated based on the fact that they get a yes.
Okay. And right now what you're saying is this 23-year-old loss mitigator really doesn't have a lot of flexibility in what he can do personally. In other words, he's not deciding it. It comes from another over him. There's parameters and say it's if it doesn't fall within that parameter, forget it?
Yeah. I would say that they can work within a specific set of guidelines that they are supplied by higher-ups.
Okay.
And they can't step outside of that. And really, if a bank like Chase Manhattan or, geez, Countrywide, I mean, Countrywide's taking back so much property right now, for a loss mitigator to try and push through a deal when he's got 70 this month and he's going to have 70 next month, he looks foolish with his boss. Don't even bring it to his desk. Why should I, you know... Hey, believe me, there's more coming, and they know it.
Mm-hmm.
So, to some degree, it's just it's another file on their desk. I should say, not so much a file on their desk; it's now just a file in their computer.
Okay. Now you say that they know it. That's an interesting comment because I've been interviewing economists that are all over, you know, some national, some local, and there's a lot of talk about this being, you know, pretty much done as far as a downturn.
Yeah.
So how come the lenders are aware of it and a lot of the economists that they listen to are telling them something different?
I think that depends on the lender's CEO that even on the day that he's responding on whether or not he says that he knows it's coming. If it's a lender that has, you know, their stuff on Wall Street, they're going to go ahead and on one day they have to protect the value of their stock. So he's going to be optimistic saying, yeah, I think, you know, this car, you know, Carr and NAR is pretty much right. And on the flip side, they're going to say, well, folks, I don't want to be a total liar. Here's what the real answer is. We have a little bit further to go. The economists, I have economists come to the Inland Empire Investors Forum, and we have conversations about, you know, some economists are beholding to the groups that pay them every time they speak. So depending on what they want to hear, the economists might placate the audience that's there.
Wow.
So that's unfortunate. We see the same thing in the newspaper. So
sure. It's hard to get real information.
You've really got to have a helicopter view and listen to people who've been around, you know, with how slow real estate cycles are. You have to listen to people who've been around for a long time in order to truly assess what's going on versus looking at just the here and now and speculating.
One of the themes that's been repetitive with the people that have been interviewed is that they have in their mind that a very small ratio of the first process of foreclosure in California end up at the courthouse steps. Something under 10% has been a repetitive comment.
Mm-hmm.
You follow the foreclosures pretty much. What would you say the ratio? Is it anywhere close to 10%?
Yeah, 10% of the properties don't go back to the bank. The reality is we did track it until it just became so silly it wasn't helpful anymore. That was about 3 months ago. It was 90% of the properties were reverting back to the lender.
Now, you're talking about at the courthouse steps or from the whole process from the beginning?
Some people are able to scratch themselves out and are able to work out potentially a forbearance agreement with the lender and are able to keep their home. I would say a small majority, in my opinion. But once the notice of trustee sale has been set and foreclosure is imminent, right now with the loan to value and where they are, there's no investors worth their weight in salt that take a look at this property and say, by golly, yeah, I'd like to spend 90 cents on the dollar on this property. In many cases, the properties that were 80-20 loans, you know, it was 100% loan to value. They had a 20% second and an 80% first. Now, most of the time, the 80% loan is 100% of the value of the house because it's dropped 20%.
Okay. So when you're dealing with a short sale, let's assume that the second is a different lender.
Mm-hmm.
And the first is also really underwater. If they're at 100% of value, they're not getting paid off. There's no way.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so do you have cooperation of the second saying, okay, we'll cooperate and just take zero?
Well, the truth is in Southern California, the lenders that were doing seconds – this is fairly new to them as well. So they're only coming around to any, no one can really stand in front of you truthfully and look you in the eye and tell you, we've been doing short sales in Southern California for 10 years. They would be lying.
Sure. Did it wasn't even one necessary for eight.
That's right. So it wasn't even necessary, really. I mean, for the, until the last probably 8 months,
right,
where actually they would even contemplate listening to you.
Right. The lenders up until then probably thought it was great to have an REO.
That's right. That's right. And so when it comes to the seconds, now they're ramping up their departments that say, hey, what can you do for me as far as what an investor or what a short sale processor like our company can do is supply them some money so that they don't take a so it's like, you know, if it's a $30,000 loan, $30,000 second, to give them $3,000, they were losing everything anyhow. As far as cooperation, yes, unless they truly are a lender that supplies seconds that doesn't know diddly and they exist.
Are there lenders that have gone out of business that are very – it makes it very difficult for you to deal with, okay, who do we get a response from?
Yeah. The Lytton Bank in particular is kind of known nationwide by owners of short sale type of organizations or investors that, that work with short sales. That is, if you supply a short sale package to Lytton Bank, they tell you, you don't call back. For 40 days. And I go over this with the people that I talk directly with when we're putting together a short sale package. Or if you do call back within that 40-day period, you go to the bottom of the pile and have to wait another 40 days. So, and that's actually consistent whenever I talk with, you know, escrow officers and everything on how they would work with payoffs. So it's not as though it's a temporary, hey, this is how Lytton is working today. Mm-hmm. No, that's how, not to speak pejoratively against Lytton, but the reality is that's how they work.
Okay.
They're slow.
If I'm the property owner and I say, okay, let's do a short sale, what am I going to get at the end of that escrow?
Well, that depends on – in Southern California – or in California, California has some uniqueness to it versus the rest of the country. If I was talking to you in Ohio, then you're talking about a lot more FHA loans, and FHA demands that the person who's losing the house and takes a has a short sale, that they get $1,000. In Southern California, that's not the case. These are conventional lenders that – that often are very resistant to the owner getting anything. There is some openness if there's like a like as a good investor to think of cash for keys to be able to give the – we can go ahead and ask or request, can we – that is the short sale processor or the investor that we're working – that is the actual buyer. Can they give them $1,000? They're willing to listen to that if it gets them out of the house so the process can take place. That assumes that there's some motivation to do the short sale on the lender's part. We can legally – we have to do one. If you have a nice house, we want the appliances. So we can pay them legally through a bill of sale for the appliances. And we actually want that. We want that, but it has to be reasonable. I'm not talking about paying for, you know, an oven, you know, $950 and the thing's encrusted with fish, you know? Mm-hmm. And so as long as they're on the up and up, there's a little bit of dough that can head their way. And usually they need that to help with the moving expenses, et cetera. You can, as an investor, also pay for the moving expenses. You can't hand them the money, but if they need some, and that's often helpful for the situation that they're in, one can legally in the state of California pay for their moving expenses. So we limit that.
Okay. If you're an owner of a property in California and you owe more than the house is worth, are there times where doing a short sale would be ill-advised?
Well, there's certain – number one is when you say ill-advised, like, oh, time waster. If you're making – and I have spoken to people making $100,000 a year. You know, they're open about it. I make $100,000 a year. They owe $250,000 on their property. It's worth $240,000. Yeah, it's ill-advised. It's a waste of everybody's time. You make too much money. Pay your bills. You know, this isn't rip off the lender day. You know, this is pay your dang bills day.
Okay.
So, yeah, that would be ill-advised at that point. It would be no matter what, it's ill advice to go into foreclosure and, yes, to work out a settlement if you can pay your bills. A short sale is the last resort. It's the last thing when you've exhausted all your other options. Then let's go ahead and move forward with a short sale. It's not an option to someone who really has plenty of others.
Okay. I think what I was getting at, now it's interesting. No, it's okay. That added another feature to it, which is great. Now, you said it's a last resort. I would think a foreclosure was a last resort, and a short sale was sort of a kind of a measure to not get the foreclosure, because the foreclosure damages the credit and the short sale doesn't. I think what I was trying to get at, is there some kind of the nature of their debt, does it change the circumstances to where, let's say I've refied my property and now I'm behind and I'm in a position where I need a short sale. Are there any ramifications of getting a short sale on refi debt as opposed to the original loan when I bought?
I say yes. The answer is it depends. Unfortunately, I wish it could be very, very simple. But if a person has there's a difference between, and what you're kind of getting to is whether the money, we'll say a $500,000 house with an 80-20 loan. That means there's a $400,000 first and a $100,000 second. If it's purchase money, there in the state of California, no, there's no tax ramifications associated with that. We're really talking about tax or debt relief here. But whenever we talk about refi, we'll say the property's worth $500,000. It was purchased for $250,000, and they refied it all the way up to be owing $500,000. Yes, there would be debt relief and therefore taxation on that, we'll say $250,000. However, the big if is, you shouldn't be doing a short sale or work on a short sale with someone who has done that if they have all kinds of other assets.
Okay.
In my opinion. Why? Because they are going to get hit with that debt relief because they have other assets and they're really not meeting criteria. One can go to irs.gov and Form 982 has to do with the concept of
insolvency.
And if they're insolvent the same year that the foreclosure or short sale takes place, then they have a decent argument to the IRS saying, don't tax me on this amount of money. Now, we don't supply at the short sale processor any tax advice. We don't supply. We can suggest that they talk to their CPA, that they fill out these forms that are available online through a government website, but we make pains not to violate some of the civil codes that are out there that are there to protect individuals in foreclosure. And so as a result, to answer your question, yeah, there can be tax ramifications. However, for us to work with individuals at the short sale processor, we take a look at that and we ask ourselves, hey, could we be doing more damage than good and back off in those cases?
Okay, well, that speaks very highly. Do you think that you're joined as an industry in a whole? Do you think that that's paid attention to? Where
most of the time, if you talk to realtors and brokers, they totally don't understand that. They haven't been supplied that information. In fact, attorneys and lawyers locally have supplied them with misinformation just to protect them, as if the dumber you are, the better.
Mm-hmm.
But no, most individuals don't want to know what I just got done saying. So they, and by not knowing it, they don't have to deal with the guilt that they should actually feel as a result of misinforming and doing this person harm and not supplying them with at least the opportunity to gather the information that would help.
Okay. Let's just,
that was a lot. So.
No, that's good. We'll just anchor in that point, though. So let's just go back to that event where you have a $250,000 purchase price, a house that's now you cranked up, refis up to $500,000, and the seller ends up getting a short sale for $400,000. So $100,000 of debt relief could, in essence, add $100,000 of income to your yearly
You're going to be 1099, but you're going to be taxed on $100,000 worth of gain. And actually, you made that. I mean, you got $100,000 there.
So that decision really cost you $40,000 plus.
Absolutely.
Okay. And then it's do I let the house go into foreclosure and get nothing, but I'm done.
They get hit with the same 1099, man. It doesn't matter.
At the foreclosure sale,
that's
it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. They still have. They're still going to get hit.
Now, what's interesting is I've been in front of an attorney with a different opinion. So that's
right.
The problem is there's different opinions on that. Now, you're confused. So you think that's not true?
I think that I know that the 1099 from the lender has to come either way.
It has to come either way. But I've been told that the nature of the lender had a choice mm-hmm. to pursue a judicial foreclosure. When they pursue the notice of default process, mm-hmm. they've made a decision to make that loan now non-recourse. The fact that it's non-recourse debt eliminates the IRS situation. It becomes like a purchase money. That's an opinion of one attorney, and yours is different.
Right.
That's
and,
what's fun.
and I think that part of what – I mean, he couldn't make a blanket statement. The reality is there's going to be seconds that are home equity lines of credit, and that blows out everything he just got done saying.
And, that's correct.
And so looking at it from the perspective of a conservative standpoint – that is, you're going to get taxed on this. You're going to get a 1099. Is a kind of a stance that we take either way, and then we say we can't provide tax advice. But by golly, this appears as though you're going to get hit. You're going to get hit with that same 1099. It's up to you to report the income. But anyways,
well, the IRS gets the 1099.
The IRS gets 1099, but whether or not they
follow
actually
up.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, that's a little bit risky because when they follow up 4 years later and it sticks, then you got penalties and interest. So anyway, it's a bad thing.
Yep.
Okay. Will the lender cooperate with a short sale if the people are current?
Probably never. I wouldn't. I mean, just put yourself in the situation of someone owes you $100,000, and by golly, they're paying you every single month. And the way that you make your money is by collecting payments on debt. That's exactly what they're in business to do. However, I have had circumstances where some of these secondary lenders, or when I say secondary lenders, I mean lenders that are providing seconds, have put into the paperwork that the money is going to be automatically deducted from the owner's bank account. Now, so the first is not automatically deducted, but the second is. Well, the second has to, that just so happens to be a $200 a month payment. So there are times that I'm finding that the second is current, but the first is foreclosing. Mm-hmm. In those cases, it is in the best interest of the second to go ahead and accept the short sale, because it's inevitable what's going to happen, but one needs to just communicate that. So the answer to your question is, if there's a second, yeah, in those situations, yes. If it's a first with a good – if it's a first, no.
Not even if they're over-encumbered?
Not even they're over-encumbered. Okay. They're making payments.
Okay. All right. We got about a minute and a half left in this segment. Mm-hmm. Take us through the process of doing a short sale in a minute and a half.
Oh, geez. The simplest. Now, from an owner's perspective, it'd be number one to contact your realtor and/or the short sale processor, and you can get us at theshortsaleprocessor.com.
Thank you.
And you can then speak with someone who will take a look at your situation and let you know, because there's some paperwork that needs to be done. Hey, this is a worthwhile process. You complete some. You just bring your 2005, 2006 tax returns. Fill out a few simple pieces of paper that authorizes us the ability to go ahead and contact your lender on your behalf. And that's really it. There's things that we do on our end that are far more intricate than that. That if you're an owner, it's really unnecessary to go into. But that's pretty much it. It's a pretty simple process from an owner's perspective. I get it done in one meeting. They come to my office and they're done.
Okay. And what's the cost of that service?
To an owner, nothing. Zero. Nada.
Really?
Well, the lender, as bad as this sounds, the lender actually pays our fees.
Okay.
We don't ask them for $10.
Wow.
In fact, when we work with realtors, we don't ask for money either. Those our bills are paid directly through the lender.
Okay. See, I didn't know that.
Yep.
All right. Well, Nick, thanks for joining us. We're going to continue this conversation on our next week's show, Nick Manfredi. And we're looking forward to hearing the rest of the story. Mm-hmm. ShortSaleProcessor.com.
That's right.
Okay.
You've been listening to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com or email questions and/or comments to radio@thenorrisgroup.com. We'll see you next week at 5:30 here on News Talk 590 KTIE.